Hello there, it's Gina Gardner here from Genuinely You, and I'm really, really thrilled to be able to introduce to you my guest, Greg Yates. We met through LinkedIn, and I was blown away by his story, and I felt it was really important that that was a story that was heard, because although you'll find out that his story is incredible, there are so many life lessons in there that I think are valuable to everyone. Now, I want to read the bio because it's quite a significant one, and I want to make sure that I give it full status. After more than 30 years in business, owning as many 14 businesses at one time with hundreds of employees, Greg found himself in denial. Without trusted advisors in 2008, when the real estate market crashed, he made decisions that ultimately cost him tens of millions in capital and a year in prison. Going from massive success to the brokenness of failure, Greg came face to face with the false beliefs that had blocked his decision-making process and left him isolated as a leader. Then he made an even more shocking discovery. He wasn't the only leader living in isolation. Today, Greg Yates is the author of four books, and his fifth book, entitled Circumstances Lie, will be released soon. His first book, an international bestseller, is titled Broken: How Being Broken Unlocked the Greatest Success of My Life. Greg is a speaker, author, trainer, and coach, but his ultimate mission is helping leaders develop and consistently share their definition of success through Leadership Mastermind. Now, he calls that mastermind my practice zone, and through his latest initiative, The Effortless Author. He helps leaders eliminate head trash and get buy-in with their people, and it's Greg's personal definition of success. So welcome, welcome. I wonder if you would share your story, because it is such a powerful one.
Thanks for having me, Gina. I enjoyed our conversation when we first met so much, and I've told many people about your story because I think it's so fascinating, and your tenacity, your vigor for life, your passion for people to be their authentic selves. It's inspiring to me, and I'm privileged to have the opportunity today to share a little bit of my story, so thanks for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy what happens when you pretty much think you're Superman and you can do anything, and that the businesses that you're in, you know, you gradually begin to think that you're the one who has all the answers. I don't know if you've ever been tempted by that little morsel there, but that's sort of where I was for quite a long time, and it resulted in a tremendous amount of isolation for me because I couldn't ever be myself. I was this persona. I was always this guy that I thought everybody wanted me to be. And I was very lonely in that, but I also thought I liked that guy. I thought, you know, this guy can do the things that the little guy hiding inside me, inside behind underneath all my head trash that was going on. He's afraid sometimes. And this other guy, he's never afraid. And I just literally just crusaded my way through decades of leadership and of business building. And it got to the point that I didn't think I could lose. Isn't that a dangerous place? I thought I was bulletproof and I really couldn't lose. And when the real estate crisis hit here in 2008, early 2009, we were in the middle of a big development. I had about $14 million already in the project. And when things came crashing down, suddenly, you know, none of the banks that were involved wanted to be involved. Everybody ran for cover. And I was in denial. I said, you know, hey, we can outlast this. We've got money. How long could it last? You know, a year, 18 months. And so I just put my head down and did not make the decisions that needed to be made. And as a result, I ended up, the simple truth of it is I ended up borrowing against one of my businesses so we could complete some payments in the development because I wanted to keep going. And so I borrowed money somewhere else, and then I used it to build some projects there. And about 3 years later, some guys came and raided my offices. I don't know how it is where you are, but they just came and said and took everything they could take documentation-wise, and I had no idea what they were looking for. And it turns out that what I did was considered bank fraud, and at least in the United States. And I had no intention of doing anything illegal, but that's the way it shook out. I ended up with an amount of money that I could have written the check and paid them back right then, but nobody was interested in that. It was about exacting a pound of flesh from these evil business guys. And that's where I ended up. So I battled that for about 3 years. And during that time, I found the real me. You know, the first thing I wanted to do was just avoid everybody, right? I just stuck my head in the sand. I wouldn't even talk to people. I had one friend, though, who would not leave me alone. He persisted. He kept coming. He kept coming. And finally, one day when I wouldn't return his phone calls anymore, he drove about 200 miles and met and just showed up at my office. And I was angry. And over the course of a couple of days, he got me to open up to what was really going on in my life. And I hate saying it because I'd like to think that I could help people avoid brokenness. But my experience is that being broken is the only real avenue that we have to actually finding breakthrough in our lives, to finding who we really are, to giving ourselves permission to be vulnerable. And as a result of that process, you know, I thought, I've learned everything I need to learn. You know, I can avoid that. No, I still had to go through the entire process. I had to go to prison for almost a year. And I was, you know, completely crushed, humiliated. And the stories, my prison stories, which a lot of them are in my book, The Broken Book, the prison stories are endless because it's just not anything you can ever anticipate.
No.
No matter what you think it's like, it's just nothing. There's nothing that you could say that would describe what it's like to be warehoused somewhere, have no personal identity and no, you know, no self, no worth, no. Basically, in anybody's eyes for that period of time. And I found tremendous value during that time. I journaled like there was no tomorrow. I spent that time soul searching. And when I got out, I decided that I needed to write my story. Not because I wanted to write my story, Gina, but because I needed to know what happened and I needed to memorialize what had happened. I didn't want to go there again. It was like I wanted to be able to put a foundation down. And when I had just gotten back, a friend of mine asked me, Greg, so going forward, if you were going to be successful, what would it look like? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's dumb. That's an obvious question. Of course, we all know what success looks like. Society's already defined that, right? And it took me about 3 days before I could even answer the question. And I realized that that's a question that leaders in particular do not know how to answer. They craft mission statements that end up on websites or on walls somewhere they can't even find, and they don't really have a clear definition of success that's living in their language, that's living in their meetings, that's living in everything they do. And I began to become a crusader for my own message. I called it my tribal signal. I would put it out there, and you know, most people who identified with me echoed it back to me. And the people who didn't, they weren't my people. And then I began to teach business people how to do that. And then now, to cut to the chase, now a lot of what I do is in masterminding groups where I'm helping them, I would say brand in some ways, but I'm helping them identify that clear, crystal clear message about what makes them successful or would make them successful, and then find the overlap with them and their people, because human potential and the engagement of teams and relationships is the number one thing that's destroying our efficiency, our joy. It's keeping us from being, as companies, as individuals, as families, it's keeping us from being who we could be and who would we would be filled with joy to be. So that's become my message, my mission. And then the last step of that, as you mentioned, is this Effortless Author Initiative, because I began talking to business leaders and they would share their passion with me. And I would take notes and I'm like, you need to write a book. This is amazing. You don't, what would happen if all of your people understood what you just shared with me? And of course, immediately, you know what happens? They're like, oh, I could never do that. Like I can never talk in public. I can never write a book. I can never. So I began actually doing interviews and writing a couple of other people's books for them.
Yeah.
Not really because it was what I wanted to do, but because the story needed to get out there. And I've realized through that process that helping people, just like I did, to get down to the nitty gritty of their own story and their own definition of success makes it live in them. And this is one of the reasons I love your words so much, because it helps them be genuinely who they are in real time. And that's my story.
Thank you. There's just so much stuff, richness that I'd like to tease out. I want to take you back to that point when you're in prison. You know, you were, by any stretch of the imagination, by societal values, that you were successful. You had been successful. You had a big business. It made a lot of money. You had lots of people working for you, which for many people is their view of success. Now, how is it that you turned those lemons into lemonade and actually used it as the fuel to power moving forward, when so many people, for them, that would have just destroyed them and their whole life would have been over? What do you think makes the difference between people who give up and those people who use life's challenges? And we're both, I think, those sort of people who use life's challenges to help propel them forward.
I'd be lying if I said that there weren't moments when I just wanted to disappear.
I'm sure that's true for both of us.
I'm going to be honest. There were times when I was, I don't know if I was truly suicidal, but I was just of the mindset that I'd be better off if I were dead. And so would my family. And I was sure of it. I think much like this, you know, the cycle of grief is much what I endured, because initially, you know, you go into denial. And it's all about, this isn't right, you know, it's about blame, it's about, you know, all of these things. And then ultimately, I'll tell you a little story that was really, sorry, I get choked up on this. It was really a turning point for me. And I'm a person, I'm a believer, okay? I'm a Christian person. I always thought I was a good guy and everything else, and lived and went to church and all these things. But I never really felt like I needed my faith. And I remember Vicky, my wife, always would go to the flower and garden show in Chicago. And of course, I never had time to go to such things. You know, she would go and I, you know. And well, I had time. And it was all in the chaos. It was before I knew that I would be going to prison. I just knew that everything was falling down around me. And it was just, yeah, it's the only conversation you can even have. Anybody who talks to you, that's all they want to talk about. How are you doing? You just don't even want to think about it anymore. And I went with her. And we walked into that building. And I was just overwhelmed with the beauty and the detail. And this is not me. This is not my typical, I look right past those things. I walked up to these flowers and just looked at the incredible detail of these flowers. And I just cried. I just was overwhelmed with emotion. And it just occurred to me that I'm not the biggest thing in the universe. You know, it's not all about me. That there are details and beauty that exist that have nothing to do with my ego or my success or the things that I've, that my desperate need for validation. That was such a big part of my story. And I just literally just about fell apart right there. And Vicky's like, what's going on? What's the problem? I just couldn't even talk. And it was a turning point for me because I realized that it wasn't over. You know, my life was not over. I began to adopt what now I look back and see as several new beliefs. But one of those beliefs began that day because I began to believe that my highest created purpose, just like those flowers, my highest created purpose was still ahead of me. And as long as I thought it was behind me, I don't think I could have turned those lemons into lemonade. No. But when suddenly it occurred that no matter what I was going through, my highest created purpose was still ahead of me. I could still bring value. I could still give the very best of myself to my family, to everybody I came in contact with. I had to get a hold of that because at first, I have to be honest, I didn't really believe it.
Yeah.
I thought that I had failed so much that people would no longer be able to hear me. I'm a vocalist. Sorry. I'm a singer. I love to sing. I've trained classically. I've done a lot of that. And strangely enough, I had things booked in churches and in all kinds of my local environments, university environments, when I got indicted. And nobody wants to have you come anymore.
Yeah.
When that happens. And I understand that. And to this day, I have, you know, 5 years. I'm probably in my prime vocal life, and I do nothing with that. And it's painful. But I still know that me singing, me performing, me doing anything that I do that brings attention to me is not me being genuine with who I'm created to be. And until I could get myself out of the way and be broken like that, then I really had no hope. I was going to drown in that. I guess that's my long answer.
It's really interesting to me because I think I'd like to challenge you, really. I think what you talk about in terms of getting ego out of the way is just so important. The need to be the best boy or girl, to be seen as being at the top, and doing that in an ego-driven way is hugely detrimental, I think, particularly for a leader, but for anybody, whether we're talking about a family, an organization. However, I'd like to just suggest a slightly different perspective in terms of your singing, because you can be totally genuine if the intention from your singing is to give pleasure to other people and to serve those people in giving something of beauty and something that makes them feel. The difference is singing because you want to be noticed, you want to stand up, it's all about you. I would suggest you just shift it and make it all about them and give them the gift of your time and your talent, because you're giving it to them with love rather than because you're doing it in order to be noticed. I would suggest to you it's a God-given talent. It is criminal to waste it, and there will be people who will get pleasure from hearing you sing. So I'd like to at some point hear you sing. I too used to sing, and it's something that particularly, you know, with the kids at school, you know, I had lessons at the academy for a little while. Huge pleasure for oneself, and I don't think there's anything wrong with doing things that give one huge pleasure. In fact, I think we ought to do it. The difference is when you take the ego out of it.
You're right.
But I do believe that maybe it's the next step in your journey, or a step, a little step in your journey, to differentiate between doing something that you're good at, that you love, and doing it with a different intention that actually makes it a gift for others instead of an ego trip for you.
You know, it's interesting that I even brought it up, because I don't remember ever mentioning that to anyone. It just came to my mind, and I appreciate your feedback on that. You know, it's never, I think my biggest challenge right now is that I was used to people asking, you know, and now nobody asking, so I'm just not doing. But I really appreciate what you said there, because that frames it differently for me as a gift I can give, rather than standing back saying, well, I'm waiting on somebody else to unlock that.
And there are many people for whom that would enjoy. But I want to then go on to this, because this is just like a rich tapestry. There are so many colors and roots that we could talk about. But I absolutely agree with you that most people don't define what success looks like. So they never know when they've got there. And so nobody's quite sure when they've got there, and the goalposts keep changing. And so there's no sense of this is that we've done well, that we can actually take a time to reflect on what's gone well and what could have been even better. But I'm interested in, you know, your definition of success has, by the sound of it, changed hugely. So what for you is now your definition of success?
Thanks for asking. You know, my definition of success on a personal level is having an impact that changes other people's lives by me being in their life. I've realized, see, I don't need, this sounds bad to say, but I don't need money. I don't need any of these things. What I need is the ability to interact relationally with other people and to give them these gifts of what I've experienced. I tell people, I want you to learn what I've learned without experiencing what I've experienced. And for me, that's my definition of success. I share a lot. I work a lot with young businessmen, primarily men, not all, but primarily, because so often that's where the ego comes in. And the first chapter of my book, where I literally talk about what it was like to be me at that time before the crash, you know, and oh, I mean, it just reeks of ego. The things I would have never said out loud, that I wrote them. Yeah. And I've had so many people contact me, men, and say, I can totally relate to everything you said. So that's my definition of success now, is helping them get past themselves.
Okay, so now taking that, what's your dream? You've still got plenty of life left. So what's the dream that, you know, if I can be or do or whatever, is it to just continue, and there'd be nothing wrong with that, just continuing as you are, is there more that you, or different, that you would like to find a way of attaining being?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, because typically in the past I've answered a question like that with a business answer.
No, I'm asking for the
right.
I'm asking in terms of you. I mean, it strikes me that you've got huge experience and gifts to offer. You've got a strong sense of purpose. And with that purpose, I believe, well, certainly for me, out of that, my purpose comes huge fulfillment.
Yeah.
So what for you?
At this point in my life, the greatest thing that I have that I want to attain is for my family and everybody I come in contact with to have seen me as someone who made their life better, and that I could leave some form of legacy that's not ego-driven, but, you know, we all have those people in our lives that we say, didn't get anything out of this. They made an impact on my life. They gave me perspective that I never could have had. And I'm 60 years old. Not old, right? But it's not young either. It's not young either. And when I think about my life right now, I realize that the things that mattered so much to me don't matter that much anymore. Mm. What matters to me is to see my fire, passion, and consciousness in my grandchildren, and to see it in the lives of business people that I'm working with, and to get messages like I did this morning from a business guy that I work with and coach, and to get a message from him that's just personal and all about things that are vulnerable for him that he feels he can share with me. I mean, I don't know how to actually say that in a word or two, but those are the rich things of my life.
They're the jewels, aren't they?
They are. They give me so much joy. I've been married 40 years, and Vicky deserves the credit for that. In fact, just the other day, she said, you know, we've had 37 years of great marriage. And I said, honey, we've been married 40 years. She said, I know.
But which three she's referring to.
Yeah. I thought it was probably more like 10 she was referring to. But, you know, but the truth of the matter is, I wasn't the same person that I am now during the first 35, probably. And she sees that difference. And first she says, who are you and what did you do with my husband? And then the rest of the time, you know, we're just like kids. I mean, we just love being together, and we enjoy the relationship because we're not looking for anything out of the relationship. We just love the relationship. And I don't know if that even makes sense to a younger me, but it makes total sense to me now. And that's the life I want. That's the guy I want to be.
Do you not think that that's, for me, as I listen to you, that's the difference between love which has conditions and unconditional love, and what you describe that you have now for the two of you is unconditional love. And that's very precious. I'd just like to spend a bit of time, and I really appreciate that you have shared so honestly with us all. But I'm a young businessman. I'm a young buck, full of it's all about me, and I'm going to do it my way, and I've got to not only be right, but I've got to be seen to be right. So what are the pieces of advice? What are the strategies? Give me some of your wisdom that I, as a young business person, male or female, ego-driven, want success, but I want it on my terms. So what are you going to say to me?
It's a fascinating conversation anytime I begin speaking with someone to find out where they are, because people only talk to me if they're not where they want to be, right? I mean, it starts because they may not even know where they are, but they know they're not where they want to be. So that conversation begins with what I call the definition of success, the framework for definition of success, which has, you know, woven into it the core value search and all of the things that we're all familiar with that too often have become tokens in our culture as business people. And we spend a great deal of time identifying where we are, where we want to be, and what's in the middle. What's the enemy? What's the enemy to my success? If I were going to be successful, it looks like this. What is preventing me from being success? And then we try to create imagery around the enemies in the middle, which is really where I came up. It's not my term. I'm sure somebody probably laid claim to this, but I obsessively talk about head trash. Because the enemies, I did a talk one time that I called Hate Your Enemies. And of course, people are like, what? My mom was like, you know, you can't hate your enemies. I said, Mom, our enemies are not people. They're not. The enemies are those limiting challenges. Those, you know, I don't know if you've read the book, The Big Leap, he talks about upper limit challenges and things that we self-impose that we don't even know we're self-imposing, the entire belief system that we, and Gina, you've been there, you're there now, where you can listen to somebody talk and in just a minute, they are broadcasting their beliefs. You can hear what they believe. You can hear it in everything they say. And you want to just point it out and say, that's wrong. That's a false belief. You think it's true, but it's not. It's false belief.
Be very unladylike now and just say to me that that's when I say to people, I've got a bullshit meter and my bullshit meter is going crazy.
You got it. Yeah. But see, we often can't hear that in ourselves.
No, it's so easy, isn't it, that when you're outside the situation, but when people are just embroiled in it, they can't see the wood for the trees. And having that opportunity for somebody to just hold up the mirror and say, really? Can be so helpful.
I'm kind of an in-your-face speaker and coach, and that is I don't hold back. And often, especially with men, I'm really in their face. And part of the shock value of that, I mean, I'm not vulgar or anything like that, but part of the shock value of that is that most leaders aren't used to anybody contesting them.
No.
And I do it with force because I have that kind of persona anyway.
Yeah.
And what I've learned is just the other day, I was speaking with a guy and I like you said, I gave him the BS meter. I didn't say it that way, but I said, no, this is the truth right here. I'm going to cut through the smoke for you. I'm going to give you what you're looking for. Here it is. And he literally, before the conversation was over, 62-year-old business owner, very successful. He broke down and cried because he did not see himself the way I saw him.
No.
He had so much garbage going on in his own thoughts about who he was. He could not let himself be who he really was. And it wasn't that I was calling out negative things. I was calling out positive things that he denies and defers constantly as to all the reasons why he's limited, why he can't, why he hasn't, etc. And that's what the conversation looks like. Do you want to be liberated or do you just want to talk about stuff? I mean, do you want progress or do you just want to find support for your weak position? Because if you're looking for support for your weak position, you're talking to the wrong guy. But if you're looking to break through and go do something that tests you, that pushes you beyond your limits, that breaks free of the expectations, spoken and unspoken, that have been put on you or that you imagine have been put on you, then we can go there. But we're only going to go there if that's really what you want. And if you're just content, you just want to make a few extra dollars or you're looking, I'm not your guy. And for me, it's an all-in type relationship because you can't get paid enough to do this kind of stuff for people. You just can't. You know what the greatest pain for me is, Gina? And maybe you've experienced this. I'd love to hear if you've experienced this. My greatest pain is that I get more invested in them than they are in themselves.
And often have that conversation with people and say, do you know what? I'm working harder at this than you are. And actually, I can't do it for you. In fact, it would be so much easier if I could. If I could just come and you know, plug you in and do it for you and off you go. Happy days. But actually, this is about the process and you owning it. And you making some direct choices. You can carry on as you are. And if you do, you'll always get what you've got. You know, Einstein's definition of madness, my favorite definition, to keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. And we all do it at times. And some make it an art form. And then blame everybody else because they're stuck. And I think people taking on board, you know, this is your choice. Everything you do is a choice. Yeah. But if you are going to choose to stay stuck, then there will be consequences to that. Don't beef about it.
I'm not even sure we can do that by ourselves.
I think it's very difficult. Well, I think there are people who can take bits from different people and they can find a way to get there. But I think for me, it's about the difference between taking a meandering road that takes you forever and taking the motorway. And if you've got someone helping you, you can go in the fast lane and you can make these changes just as effectively. You don't need to go through, years and years of it. You can circumnavigate this if you give yourself permission and you're prepared to do the work.
But it's vulnerable.
Not half. And you have been a perfect example of how there is huge strength in vulnerability. And I am very grateful to you for that, because for so many people, I think that they believe that if we are vulnerable, we'll come across as weak. And the one thing that comes hugely across in your energy is that you are an amazingly strong person. And I think you've modeled for people that vulnerability is something to embrace. And I thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. As you were saying that, to be honest, I wouldn't have gone there if I had a choice.
No.
I wouldn't have. I would have done anything to keep from being broken. Anything.
I understand that. But again, I think it's define broken. And I would say, I understand you went through an extreme. But I think for most people, it's as soon as that you own your vulnerability, then you have the chance to rebuild. But if you are not prepared to own it, then it's impossible to really move forward. You might give the impression of that, but it doesn't last.
Right.
Because it's not built on being genuine, being authentic.
It's like as if we didn't heal. You know, like say if we broke our leg, but it never healed.
No.
And we went through life.
The analogy I use is you're putting a sticking plaster on a boil. And actually, unless you lance that boil and get rid of all of the rubbish from inside, it's never going to heal. But when you do, it can heal quickly and cleanly. Now, we're getting to the end of our time. So before I ask you about where people can find you, and are there any things that you've not had the opportunity to share that you would like to? I mean, your greatest life lesson, is there anything that we've not talked about that you'd like to share about that?
You know, the thing that I mention to people most often is that a term that you've probably used or heard, and that is our greatest strength is also our greatest weakness. And what I've learned, and of course it's scripture too, but, you know, is that in my weakness, that's where I find strength. And the two are inseparable.
Yes.
And even today, everything I want to accomplish is only going to happen because I'm able to embrace and be genuine about the fear or the weakness, the vulnerability that I am feeling at that moment. And anytime I'm looking for a solution or a breakthrough, and this is what I mostly tell myself. You know, it's one thing, we're good at telling other people what they ought to do. This is what I have to tell myself, is that the reason I'm struggling with that is because there is fear, there's weakness, there's vulnerability that I'm avoiding.
Yeah.
And that is the core journey. That's the core pathway to success. I don't care. I met somebody just the other day, and I said this quick thing to him, and I'll be done. I said, hey, if we're going to be friends, what would that look like? What would you say would be a definite? What would your definition of success be if just you and I were going to be friends? What would you say would occur? And they, of course, look at you like, what are you talking about? I said, no, seriously, because I know this. I want a good relationship with you, and I'm probably going to screw it up sometime, and you probably are too. So what if we just got together on what would it look like to have a clear definition so that when that happens, you and I can come back and say, remember our definition? Because when we have a definition of success in our health, in our mindset, in our mental growth, let's say, in our relationships, in our faith, and in our finances. When we know what that looks like and we can return to it, then we can have an effective decision-making framework, whether it's just, I want to be your friend.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if people did that for their partners in life, their partners in business, their colleagues, their friends, their neighbors? Life would take on such a different feel, wouldn't it?
We want these complex things, don't we? We all think, oh, I'm gonna hire Gina and she's gonna tell me some thing I've never thought of or heard of before. It's gonna be something completely undiscovered. And what we know is it's these simple things, and we find a way to execute them. We find patterns and systems that we can use to execute them in our daily lives. And guess what? We're successful. It's fantastic. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. And it's been an absolute joy. So where can people find you?
You can find me on Effortless Author. That's effortlessauthor.com. Yeah. Greg@effortlessauthor.com is my email. On that page, there's also a link to a free copy of my book that is just still in editing, but it's called Circumstances Lie. I love the book. It's actually more of a parable, if you will. You know, it's a story. I first wrote all of the tech, you know, all the things you would talk about, and then I thought nobody's going to read this, so I told the story. And it's a fascinating story, in my opinion, dealing with the progression of how we understand that the circumstances in our lives tell us five really interesting lies. And we have to move beyond those lies if we want to be successful. So I'd love to give you a free copy of that book. You can find it on effortlessauthor.com. There's a link there that says books, and then you just click for a free copy. And when that's out, we'll make certain that anybody can get it. And that's all I have.
So I'd like to say a huge thank you for being a guest on this with me. It's been an absolute joy, and I look forward to speaking to you again. And remember, give them the website again. It is
effortlessauthor.com.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com. Or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello there, and welcome back to the second part of Thriving Not Surviving. I'd like to introduce Rachel Davidson to you. Those of you that have listened to Thriving Not Surviving on a regular basis will know that Rachel and I do these genuine chats on a regular basis. Rachel and I are both international best-selling authors. Rachel's books, The Point of Me, The Truth of Her, really brilliant, and her new one, which is about to come out, I hope, anytime soon. And you'll find all of my books, the latest of which, Thriving Not Surviving, which is really the theme of this program. We're going to be looking at transformation today. And if you think about it, we are surrounded by transformation. Nature is a really, really good example. You know, we transform between the seasons. You know, as we record this, we're moving into spring. And every time I go into my garden, I find that things have transformed. If you think about a butterfly, it transforms from what seems to be an ugly chrysalis into something which is absolutely beautiful, but it doesn't do it without a struggle. We transform within our lives physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so we're going to spend the next little while looking at transformation. So Rachel, welcome. You've transformed into an amazing author, for example.
I think transformation is quite an interesting thing because you can sort of talk about it as if it's a brand new. I think transformation is a little bit like milk teeth. They're always there. It's always there.
Yes.
And I think if you acknowledge that actually any transformation that is going to occur is actually innately within you already, I think transformation can feel a little less scary than starting from new, having to go and create something from brand new. I think we all arrive on this planet with exactly the resources and strength that is available to us in order to do the transformation. And we talk about transformation as in something miraculous, something new happening, but I do think that actually it is a bit like that butterfly analogy you mentioned, which is we are intended to do it. It is naturally within us, and we just need to apply effort and application and put our attention in the right places. And you know, if we are feel like a caterpillar and we think we're never going to turn into a butterfly, we're thinking in the wrong way, because the caterpillar is absolutely destined to become a butterfly. There may be a few things that they have to do. So caterpillars have to reach, I'm no biological expert, which is about to be revealed, but caterpillars presumably have to eat enough in order to get to a certain trigger point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the same with us and how we approach life. So transformation for me is something that is always from coming from inside. And although we're often trained to look from an outward perspective for transformation, I think we always have the resources inside, and it is always intended, just like we're always going to have our baby teeth arrive and we're always going to have our adult teeth arrive.
I think that's a really good point. And, you know, if you think about, for example, I mean, nature's a wonderful example of transformation, and they are all metaphors, aren't they, for us. If you think about an acorn and a mighty oak tree,
yeah,
everything starts, doesn't it, with that small kernel, which seems so unlikely. You know, very often they look pretty dead, don't they? There's nothing very animated about an acorn.
Yeah. If you read Wayne Dyer's Power of Intention, he talks about the acorn and the oak tree. And he talks about it in the sense of saying, how does the acorn know it's going to turn into an oak tree? How does that happen? And that question, which seems quite flippant, this question, but the scientists, they don't know the actual answer of how the acorn knows it's to turn into an oak tree versus something else. They don't understand that space yet, and that is the where the magic of the universe lies. And because every acorn will turn into an oak tree, and so that is true of what our growth can be too. I'm bleeding into the areas of fate, predetermined fate,
right? Big one. And I probably, you know, fate is a theme for a completely different conversation because it's so big. I'd like to stick with the transformation. And I think if you look at how we transform and how the power to transform is innately within us, I think that that's really important, particularly as I believe that we are living at a time when the earth and our role within our lives with it on this earth have been through huge transformation this year. If you think about, you know, how lives were transformed during the coronavirus crisis, how the norm suddenly became something that wasn't normal, bless you, anymore, and how people's perceptions transformed, how very often there was a complete reevaluation of values and what was important. And I think that, you know, we're going through an energetic transformation at the moment. They talk about the rise of the feminine energy, the rise of the feminine divine. And I think it's very easy to dismiss that as mumbo jumbo. But it seems to me that you know, if you look at energy, and particularly feminine energy, and not in terms of being male in the sense of male gender, female gender, but in terms of the flow of energy, creativity, compassion, care, nurturing, as opposed to being in the male energy of competition and needing to demonstrate logic and being right. And there's nothing wrong with that in and of itself. It's the way in which it's used. But I think we're being given an opportunity as individuals and as a race to transform the way in which we operate within our lives on a daily basis. And those small choices can transform much bigger things.
Yeah. I mean, that male-female energy is quite an interesting one to explore, in the sense that I think it's Professor Jordan. I read a book recently, and it described female energy as chaos and male energy as order. And it, you know, it's fundamentally the same thing, which is that transformation suggests momentum and suggests, movement from one state to another. Yeah.
Yes.
So female energy, yeah, it is all about nurturing and creation and all this, but actually it can be thought of as the introducing chaos. That only makes sense when you say, well, what does male energy look like? And male energy, it, certainly described by this gentleman, is about structure and order. Okay, yeah. Then you begin to see why female energy described as chaos feels a little bit okay. Yeah, I can get on board with that. Because in and of itself, it feels a little bit like, what? But chaos and order is necessary. It's like the yin and the yang. And the point about transformation is that you will find yourself moving from points of chaos into points of order. But it is necessary for things to break down when order happens. This is why civilizations fail, because it is part of the natural rhythm that order and structure and governmental very male energies will always have to move into chaos again for a reset to happen. So transformation at that sort of like macro level, but transformation internally can feel like that too. I know that when I transformed from a life where, you know, I wasn't living to my highest abilities and wasn't really doing what I was intended to do, and transformed into my current state, that it was very scary for a lot of people, because I looked chaotic to lots of people. Yeah, what the hell is she doing? Is she having a mental breakdown? You know, all these sort of things. So I had lots of people say to me, who are you? Yeah, and I would say, because to me it didn't feel like I was being anybody except myself. Yeah, I didn't think I was being that scary. I was making big decisions and big changes, but it wasn't, I didn't think I was scaring anyone, because I wasn't really scaring myself.
No.
Going through tough times, but I wasn't really scaring myself. So So I was always like, what do you mean, who am I? And well, you never used to talk about those things, Rachel. You never used to do this. And I would say, no, because the environment I was in wasn't receptive to it. And I decided to step out of that environment to transform myself. Well, I didn't use that phrase either, but I had to step out of the environment to be transformed. And that can be scary for people watching it. And I often feel that transformation for yourself can feel natural, but transformation that's looking at somebody else can be super scary. What are they doing?
I think there's a huge amount in what you've just said, and I'd just like to unpick it. Structure is really important, and you know me well enough to know that I like things to be structured.
Yeah.
However, it's a continuum, and once structure becomes set and cast, that there is little movement in that structure, no flexibility, no creativity, it becomes a straitjacket. And I think in what the author you described talks about chaos, it is that the order of things suddenly becomes disturbed.
Yeah.
And people going through that, both those who are within the choice of that transformation, often feel unnerved. You think about puberty, for example, when bodies are changing, hormones are on the rampage, and people are trying to work out who they are.
Yeah.
And often during, you know, they talk about midlife crisis, or in the transformation you describe from moving from a very unhappy marriage into a life where you, in fact, became who you really are, rather than a transformation into somebody else. But other people were seeing a different persona because you had stayed within the structure that that environment had created. And part of the problem, I think, for people is when they are stuck in a structure that stops them being truly who they are, that feels stultifying. It deadens one's sense of life and vitality. And for many people, it closes them down completely. And I think it's one of the reasons why we should embrace transformation rather than be frightened of it. Because the closer we get to being the real us and living our purpose and being true to ourselves, the genuine article, the healthier, the more we are together and at peace with ourselves. But the journey can be an incredibly challenging one.
Yeah, I mean, that caterpillar, if it decided to be a caterpillar for the rest of its life, would not be living a happy life, I suggest.
Well, it's certainly not living its destiny.
No, and I think to be happy, content, peaceful, feeling like you're in the right place, I think you have to accept that you've got to go from being a caterpillar into a butterfly at some point. And I always quote the second law of thermodynamics when we start to talk about things like that, because the second law of thermodynamics is all about everything returning to chaos, to entropy, to its, you know, to its lowest level, yeah? And that's a fact out there in the universe that the scientists will measure. But then there's this thing called evolution, which totally goes against the second law of thermodynamics, and they don't know why.
Yes.
How does this blip happen? Why does evolution occur? Well, that's where I think the spiritual answers come from, because
I agree.
Because everything is trying to move us down towards a point of entropy, and yet we are trying to constantly evolve and become something bigger and better.
If you don't grow and you don't move forward, then if there is no momentum, then effectively you're dying, aren't you?
Actually, I wouldn't use dying. I would say you are stagnating.
Okay.
because I believe that dying is just yet another transformation.
You're right.
So I think what you're doing, if in attempting to not become a butterfly, because, you know, it's scary, the caterpillar has to basically seal itself up and then it has to sort of eat itself out from the insides.
And it's a struggle. Anybody who's watched a butterfly appear from the pupa will realize that actually it's a struggle.
It's a massive struggle.
But if you help
it, we know why, don't we?
Yes.
There's a very valid reason why it's a massive struggle for the butterfly, because it needs to struggle to push the blood into its wings. And if it doesn't do that, then the wings don't properly inflate. Yeah. This is not the right terminology, but...
you can tell we're great biologists, can't you?
So that's a really symbolic meaning for me there, in that, you know, evolution is a struggle against a very strong law of the universe, and butterflies pushing their way out of the cocoon is very strong meaning that to be struggling, to be having to use power and effort, and I don't mean as in, you know, hey, you're going through pain, so this must be a good thing. No, I just mean that, you know, that when you look at the transformation that you want, that you're hoping to achieve, and you see issues and difficulty and stuff, if you turn away from that, then you face stagnation. Because, you know, the universe kind of wants you to work at it. It doesn't give you things on a plate. No. Because the importance of creating yourself does have to be worked at. It has to be earned. If it was just literally handed to us, you know, we arrive on this planet and it says, here we are, here's all the knowledge.
No.
It's not so valuable, is it?
No, you don't learn and you don't grow. But I do think that, you know, unlike the butterfly, which needs to do this totally alone, that I know from working with so many clients, that those people who are going through various transformations find it very helpful to have someone working with them.
Yes.
Hold the space to ask the questions that perhaps they can't see in the chaos. And I would say, if you're listening to this and you're going through transformation and you're finding it to be a struggle, then get in touch and we can help. You don't have to do it alone. But ultimately, life is entirely about transforming. And I think that when we embrace the whole opportunity, there is just so many possibilities out there. And I think, you know, people having the confidence to recognize that, you know, being authentically, genuinely you is the right way to go. And that it's so easy to let other people's opinions keep us stuck in that pupa rather than going out, as you said earlier in the talk, that, you know, other people have perceptions of us and they often want us to stay the same because that makes them feel safe.
Yeah, I mean, your book, Thriving, Not Surviving.
Yeah,
you can survive in life. Yes.
Yep. And many people do.
But far, far better to thrive.
Yeah.
To grow and to transform.
Yes. So thank you very much. So we're coming to the end of today's genuine conversation. Now, I spoke at the beginning about the fact that both of us are authors. And I would really urge you to go onto Amazon or onto my website, genuinely-you.com, where you can find all our books. If you want a really good novel to read, then The Truth of Her, The Point of Him and The Truth of Her are spiritual novels which demonstrate huge transformation within them. And I'm really looking forward to the third book, more of that later on in the year. But you'll also find my books. And if you'll want to transform the style of leadership, then you can find not only the book, Manage Your Staff More Effectively, but you can find out all about the Enlightened Leadership Program, which is all about transforming into being the best possible leader you can be. So go and explore the sites. That's genuinely-you.com and enlightenedleadership.co. Really look forward to seeing you in the next show, which is in a fortnight. Or if you're listening to the recording, thanks for coming and listening to it. Please do contact us and let us know what you think. And if there are any themes that you would like us to speak on, then please let us know. So the two websites, genuinely-you.com, that's genuinely-you and the word you.com, or enlightenedleadership.co. Thanks again. Keep safe and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.